The area plan for the north and west would have completed the planning picture for the island, but it was defeated in an extraordinary vote in Tynwald, with both Keys and Legco tied 12-12 and 4-4, which meant the president of Tynwald had to use his casting vote, which by convention means voting against change. So what happened in Tynwald, and why did Tynwald vote to defeat this plan, which was the result of around 5 years' hard work by officers? The debate was supposed to be just a combined vote on the plan, but Alex Allenson moved an amendment which added nothing new to the previously defeated plan, but did give members a chance to reopen the debate. This is part of what he said.
With this plan, we have the tools to shape growth responsibly, protect our landscapes, and safeguard the property of our island for generations to come. This amendment strengthens confidence that development will be planned, serviced and sustainable. I urge honourable members to support it. The amendment adds on at the end of the original motion to recognise the importance of General Policy 2 in the strategic plan, which identifies matters that need to be satisfied in order for development to be considered permissible on the land that is zoned for development, including but not limited to the clear provision that such development can be provided with all necessary services, and recognise the importance of the development briefs in the area plan and the requirements for master plans to be prepared for key sites, and in particular recognises the development brief and master plans for land on the eastern edge of Peel, which states the master plan must address the need for and potential location of community facilities, which may include education, health and social care facilities, a neighbourhood centre and sports recreation open space. Mr President, I beg to move the amendment in my name.
Treasury Minister Alex Allenson there. Kate Lord Brennan, who led the charge against the plan in last month's Tynwald, was far from impressed by the amendment.
I don't need to stand and read off notes to cover this subject because I know it far more than the Treasury Minister who's brought this. And I can assure this entire Honourable Court that I share no common principles with him. The fact that this amendment has been brought after everything that was said and questions answered by various ministers last month that were weak, they were not strong enough in terms of public infrastructure, Mr President, it's an insult to this court and to the public that this amendment has even been brought. It provides absolutely no assurance whatsoever. Just off the top of my head, I already told honourable members last month that part of how the written statement had been watered down was to remove a requirement, as he references in Part B, that there had to be, you know, that there must be consideration of impact on education, health and social care facilities. That got watered down. Cabinet Office were warned about that. They were told about it. So were the Council of Ministers. There were questions answered last month that clearly gave a very clear answer that there has been no consideration even on impact of infrastructure. So it's just an absolute nonsense, and it gives absolutely no assurance whatsoever. The numbers are so flawed that it doesn't do things justice just to stand up and say, oh, it's been done in line with the strategic plan. Honourable members have been advised, again, given the answers already provided, that this plan is planning for partly for a population of something like 94 or 96,000 just by next spring. You know, it's just completely laughable that just one part of the island that is already drastically underserved, even in terms of basic infrastructure, is somehow being asked to make up for things that have not happened elsewhere, when the Cabinet Office's own figures, including ones that are published but will not be provided at a parliamentary level, you know, I've written to members again on this, show that there is already enough land for development. You can talk about things being zoned for open space, etc., but what is completely being ignored is the fact that public services are needed and also they need to be funded. So I don't see the Treasury Minister coming with a commitment to fund what is needed. I certainly didn't hear any answers from Honourable Ministers on that either. So it's just nothing short of deflection. It adds nothing. It just serves as an absolute denial and builds up problems that cannot be fixed in the future by departments because they don't have the resources. It's laughable, Mr. President, and I think that last month Tynwald members found their way in this debate, and they'd given careful consideration. To think that something like this is just going to assuage everything now, make everything okay, it just won't cut it at all. So I'm actually quite appalled that this has been brought forward, and I can't really see the point of it. Honourable members know by now how they feel on the basics of this issue, whether they feel that they want to basically sell the island out by supporting this plan, or whether they just actually think that on this and many other issues, the answer just has to be no. No, go away and think about it some more, because too many things are getting through. Not just in here, but they're getting approved through processes where you can point to a planning inspector here or some other report there. That means that the wrong things are happening on this island and the right responses are not coming forward. So it's not a chance I'll be supporting this amendment. The government needs to hear the message that these things are not okay, and they can't just give some kind of little message that's supposed to make everything all right, because it's not acceptable.
Glenn Faber and Peel, MHK Kate Lord Brennan there. With Cabinet Office Minister David Ashford due to be absent from 4 p.m, it seemed clear that Chris Thomas was playing for time to ensure Minister Ashford was absent from the vote. Here's part of his lengthy contribution.
You can challenge in law the process of making a plan, adopting a plan, and then approving a plan. You know, this is a legal process. This is an incredibly important legal process. And we should just remember exactly where we are, which is this morning, for personal reasons, we brought forward a vote-only item, which, you know, had an hour and a half to discuss. Over lunch, I think just a few minutes ago, we were given this amendment, which looks very much like an amendment which was there. Mr. Hooper asked questions about it. It wasn't there, and it seems to come back in slightly different words to be there again compared to the register. We also have to remember that we've had some disasters in the past with items that sort of came up over lunch. I remember back the Spark Enterprise Investment Fund, which a few years later collapsed in tears, and we're still picking up the pieces in terms of unsorted business with certain of the investments that were made. The crucial point in all of this is that we've just been given some information, which is a new amendment. I first read it about 7 or 8 minutes, say 14 minutes ago, and I would like to move an amendment now. I know that it's possible, so at the very least I need to be given time to draft the amendment. I put down the residential land availability study on the order paper to give people notice that if a trick was pulled like this, we ought to go back to the residential land availability study and actually look at what the data in that study means. So we need to adjourn to give me time so that we can debate the additional amendments that I would want to put down on the order paper in terms of what the data actually means for the area plan. Otherwise, you know, my constituents, the people I represent, have been let down because their representative wasn't able actually to provide the information. We've got to also remember that Ms. Lord Brennan last week in Keys asked for a very precise answer, and without her knowing, that answer won't be provided for today. It'll take another couple of weeks. So we're probably better off recalling this sitting rather than trying to do it tomorrow or something like that, because obviously the deadline in this is 1st of December. Look, there's millions and millions and millions of pounds dependent on this, and we look stupid doing it in this way. And if you want to be part of looking stupid doing it this way, you know, play along with this. But I, for one, won't be playing along with this. I also want to go back to the last time this happened and actually talk about the higher standards then compared to now. So I want to be positive, see a positive in this, because Mrs. Barber worked with others back in November 2020 for weeks before this equivalent motion and put together this sort of amendment, working with all of us, so we could all prepare what we thought and we could all collect our data, connect our thoughts, actually work out the argument we were going to make, write down the speech that we were going to make, and actually come together and do it very high standards in those days. It was a whole month of working out a compromise. I wasn't persuaded by the compromise, and I think I was found to be right eventually. So in that compromise, we had things like: the Cabinet Office will work towards an all-island area plan for completion before the end of 2025. That hasn't happened, but that was part of the compromise back then. It requires a proposal for a community infrastructure levy to be introduced by April 2021. That hasn't happened, even though the law says that there must be regulations about a community infrastructure levy, and that was a Treasury amendment to the Town and Country Planning Act, from memory, in about 2018, a backbencher Treasury amendment to say we must have community infrastructure levy regulations in place. And we were promised it in November 2020 to persuade us all to vote for the area plan for the East by April 2021. It didn't happen. The Economic Recovery Fund was set up in that month at quite short notice. As part of the high standard approach to it adopted by Mr. Barber, we actually had the unoccupied urban sites work completed and published, which is a good thing that came out of that process. But brownfields and the status of the sites in that register are still work to be in place. And then finally, we had all the talk of bringing together assets into one place. Look, master planning and the process of general around, and the policies are called General Policy 2, need to be better understood. If we want to look reckless, if we want to look irresponsible, just have an amendment put on your table just at the end of lunch. Treasury Minister to get up, the same Treasury Minister who called a private meeting with just a few select big developers and officers from DfE, but nobody there from Cabinet Office, Housing and Communities Board, from Department of Infrastructure, and all of those people, and completely turn policy. You will look ridiculous if you do that, assure me. I'll do everything I possibly can to make everybody who falls for that one look ridiculous. And I'm serious about this. You know, you tried me once, November 2020, I'm not really reveling in it, but you know the history is on my side about what happened next. You would look ridiculous, and I would do everything I can with a great number of my colleagues to make sure that we all look ridiculous collectively. So I would like time, Mr. President, to actually adjourn. This debate needs to be adjourned because, for one, for procedural fairness, I need the ability to work up an amendment in the light of this amendment if we're going forward on this basis. That's how serious this is. Otherwise, the next stage for this whole debate will be in the political and legal fallout that will result from it. So perhaps I can have some advice about whether we can have a short adjournment till around 4 o'clock or something to have a discussions and to work up the amendments that we need.
That was Central Douglas MHK Chris Thomas, who eventually moved his amendment after trying and failing to get the vote adjourned. Despite him being due to leave at 4, David Ashwood was still there at 4:10, and he gave a stirring speech to wind up the debate.
If I may, because there's also obviously been an awful lot said, Mr. Thomas was quite right. When you move an amendment, it reopens the debate effectively, and I think that's what we've had, a second debate. Can I start with Mr. Thomas's amendment, please, Mr. President, in the fact, actually, I'm fully supportive of it. It's effectively item 15, if I remember rightly, on the order paper. I'll give the court a bit of a spoiler alert. There was going to be a potential amendment, which I've discussed with Mr. Thomas, to this, to actually say we could do it actually earlier than the April he was wanting, but he's put the April in there, so be it. I've got no issue with his amendment if he wants to add that on the end. Turning now to Dr. Allanson's amendment, no one's going to be shocked and fall over in surprise that I'm supportive of it. I don't think that's going to be the biggest shock of the day. In terms of what it does, Mr. President, members are quite right. It doesn't change, because we have mentioned, I don't know how many more times it can be mentioned in here, and the learned attorney gave us a very clear answer to a question this morning on how you can amend a plan or remove sites, and you've got to go back through the whole process again. At this stage, once a plan is adopted, and it is one of those strange things that comes before Tynwald, it is very rare something is binary. It's a yes or no. And an area plan is, it is a yes or no. You cannot physically amend the plan. What the amendment does from Dr. Allinson is draw out the things that members had concerns about and spoke about in the last debate, in the debate last month, where people were talking about infrastructure, talking about what actually protections around Peel is there. How does master planning work? How do the development briefs work? That is there in the plan, and that is what this is drawing out. The Honourable Member for Onchan, Ms. Edge, mentioned there about the strategic reserve sites. Well, when I stood up in this Honourable Court last month, Mr. President, and I mentioned about the fact that if you don't get this plan, then the housing numbers won't be met, and I said that you would end up with developers sniffing around various different sites, taking a look at it. I was accused of scaremongering, Mr. President. Well, it's not taken many weeks for that to fall apart, has it? So, you know, it's already, I'm not giving way to anyone, Mr. President. I'm carrying on and I'm going through. But also, we've had something here today where it's been mentioned a couple of times about this being government's plan, government's development plan, as if this has just come out of the blue. This is something where government sat down in a room and suddenly decided we want to do X, Y, and Z, and this is where it's coming from. I stressed last month, Mr. President, this is something that has had a huge amount of work and preparation going into it. It is something that, in our planning system, there has to be full transparency. It has been through independent inquiries. There's been over 1,000 consultation responses, a public inquiry, drop-in sessions, community guides, even a webinar to move things really into the 21st century. You know, and one of the things that's been very clear to this is it takes time to produce a development plan, and that consultation, engagement and participation are at the very heart of that process. This isn't something that government has just drawn up. This has come from the evidence received and presented before an independent inspector. Now, it's also been suggested, Mr. President, by some members, that even if this court doesn't approve the area plan, its adoption would actually count by the department, would count for something, that the work wouldn't have been in vain. Well, I've got to say, Mr. President, Honourable Members, the Town and Country Planning Act is clear. If the plan's not approved today, the planning weight it would carry is very simple to calculate, because it's none. Further to this, well, Mr. Thomas shouts from a secondary position about material consideration. If someone tried to get a site under 10.4 of the Town and Country Planning Act, yes, the inspector's report would class as potentially, I would say, a material consideration, because it shows why there needs to be development site by site by site. I can't do any better than my predecessor, actually, Minister Harmer, in 2020, when he was talking about the Eastern Area Plan, and he said it is the plan that is the statutory document, not the planning that went into it. Let's not lose sight of that. So I want to actually repeat my words from the last sitting of this court, Mr. President. If this plan is not approved, the North and West will be left without an up-to-date planning framework. Not because the work hasn't been done, but because we've chosen not to support it. Instead, development in the North and West would continue under the 1982 development plan. 1982 development plan, Mr. President. I'm pretty certain there's people in this Honourable Court now who weren't even born in 1982. And I would also point out, there's always those that boast. and I would also point out that, in fact, actually, the only reason it's called the 1982 Development Plan is because that's when Tim Wood approved it. It was actually being used as guidance back in the 1970s. The Peel Local Plan, 1989. The Kirkmichael Local Plan, 1994. The Ramsey Local Plan, 1998. And Sulby, St John's and Foxdale Local Plans, which all date back to 1999. So when we talk about being forward-looking, one of the themes that has come through time after time is people keep saying we need up-to-date planning frameworks and all the rest. That's not an up-to-date planning framework. That's not going to deliver anything modern. What we are actually saying is, fine, we'll just carry on as was. And the simple fact is that is not actually going to deliver what we actually need. It's not going to change things. This has boiled down to an argument over specific sites in Peel at the end of the day, Mr. President. Let's cut through it all. That's what this has boiled down to. Not the national picture of what is needed for the overall island and the overall planning strategy of this island. So I've spoken previously about the importance of an area plan in actually achieving our ultimate aim, one cohesive development plan for the island, an all-island area plan. There are members that disagree with me totally on this, and I in the past have been an advocate for an all-island area plan. Although members are doing the best to talk me out of it, because if it's so hard to get one area plan through, you do wonder how we're going to do it when everyone's got a full interest in. There's also been talk about the strategic plan, and I do thank Mr. Crane for commenting, because Mr. Crane, I know, takes a great interest in population. So we will also know, of course, that the type of household is changing. We are seeing more and more single-person households, and so that is driving housing demand as well, because it's the type of households that also drive housing demand, not just an increase in population. If you're getting a lower percentage of people in houses, that in itself actually drives housing demand. And in terms of the services, the to and forth between him and Mr. Hooper, I think, proved the point. It really can be chicken and egg, because you really do get into a debate around what comes first, the infrastructure or the zoning for development. And what the area plans do across the entire island is it gives an indication of where that development's going to be. Because departments such as health, such as education, if they are going to build the services, they need to know what they need to build to provide for the population. And if you haven't got a development plan and you've potentially got a situation where people will have a punt here, have a punt there, see if they can get approval, that is not the way that you can actually plan for services in the future. Now, I'm going to be even more blunt, Mr. President, because we've spoken about strategic plan, and the strategic plan keeps coming up a lot, and there has been a lot mentioned in this debate about what needs to be in a strategic plan that I don't disagree with at all, and we are in the process of actually updating the strategic plan. Now, it was said, should the strategic plan really have been done first? Well, I wasn't in Council of Ministers at the time when the decision was made to progress the area plan out of the strategic plan. Should the strategic plan potentially have come first? Quite possibly. But that's not the situation we're in. We are years, potentially 18 months at least, away from a strategic plan coming forward. And I say at least. In the meantime, what we're saying is we'll have some pieces of the jigsaw, like in the south and in the east, but we're not going to have the protections for the north and west. We're just going to let things take their natural course. Now, a lot of what I said at the last sitting and a lot of what I've said at this sitting has all been prefaced by May, particularly when talking about unzoned land. And there's also, of course, been the contention around General Policy 3. As in questions I have answered, both in this own book court and another place, General Policy 3 does indeed provide some protections. But it, as I pointed out in a question recently, it also does not, though, override automatically Section 10.4 of the Town and Country Planning Act, where other things can be taken into consideration. And the simple fact is, Mr. President, when people say, well, it's very rare unzoned land, Mr. Hooper's given examples of where it has happened. But the fact is, we've never had a development plan fail before in this honourable place. So there has been zoned land in the east, there's been zoned land in the south, so when people try to go forward with unzoned land, you can say, well, there's plenty of zoned land there that's actually been agreed to meet the housing targets. You're not getting your unzoned piece. What we're saying is, if this goes down, we haven't got that. We're not meeting our housing targets. We're giving an inspector's report to people, which lays out site by site why each site should be developed. Without the master planning that's built in there, and we really are leaving it, in my personal view, and again, I don't care if I'm called a scaremongerer. I really believe firmly that we are actually leaving it at the behest of the developers. I really, really do. And if the Honourable Court wishes to do so, then we can wait and see what actually happens. It's one of those where if that happens, I really do hope that I am proved wrong. Master planning, which is within this plan, is absolutely essential. It's a crucial planning tool for delivering sustainable coordinated development. It ensures that housing isn't developed in isolation, But also alongside the things like schools, community facilities, open spaces and transport links that actually make communities more than just a residential estate. The development of a master plan for sites on the eastern edge of Peel is actually good planning, Honourable Members. It'll allow us to holistically plan for the needs of a community in terms of infrastructure, services and facilities, education, health and social care and open spaces, the very things that Honourable Members have actually been debating about. So what I would say, Mr President, is I think Members need to vote very carefully. They need to consider their vote and decide, ultimately, are we better off with the final part of the jigsaw being in place and having a proper development plan covering the north and west of the island? Or are we actually going to leave it as is, rely on 1980s things that are older than some members of this Honourable Court, and see what happens? And I can't sum it up better than that, Mr President.
That was Douglas North MHK David Ashford. So what do you think? Was Chris Thomas filibustering? Was government too complacent, particularly in asserting housing figures which relied on its population targets rather than the reality on the ground? Were the Tynwald members who voted against rights to demand facts and detail to back up the shaky housing figures? And does the plan's failure mean it's now open season for developers, as David Ashford seemed to suggest? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com, and please get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget this programme's available as a podcast. For now, I'm Phil Gorn. Go to Mayo. Thanks for listening.